Hello and welcome to this interview where we should be talking about some extraordinary places and events. Where I'm joined by Miles and Adrian. How are you guys?
Not good. I'm in the UK right now. I'm very, right. Very dangerous.
And yes. It is rainy and overcast and cold.
Yes, as well. Very much so.
It actually is.
On the contrary, I'm happy to be here.
Oh, good. Good. I like the energy. Cool. Well, most people, as certainly on our audience, will be at least vaguely aware with you and your stories and some of the stories anyway.
Oh, yes.
But so I wanted to sort of go over that because there's all sorts of questions I've got, all sorts of fascinating things. But before we go into sort of the Afghan stuff,
yes,
which I suppose would probably be the highlights, what have you been doing recently? Because you do still travel all over the world all the time, right?
Unfortunately, yes. No, it's rather nice, but I do travel a lot. That's my entire job at this point, and I never really stand still. But recently, God, what have I been doing?
I saw you firing an AK somewhere.
Yes, in Afghanistan.
That was in Afghanistan?
Yes, and to be fair, a few other places too, in Ukraine, in South Africa too, in Johannesburg. You can just do this stuff. No one really cares. I do not like the UK gun rights. There's not enough. Just been goofing off a little bit. I've been doing some business in Afghanistan back and forth, and I'm expanding out a little bit, so...
How many times have you been there then, would you say?
I lost count after 10 or right. 9, yes.
Close.
Yeah, quite a lot.
How many times have you been there, Adrian?
Only once.
It was only the once?
Only the once,
Was that
yeah.
enough for you?
I hope to return.
You do
soon.
Hope to return?
Yes, I hope to return.
Right.
It was a very interesting time. It's a very pretty place, to be fair. Mm. Yeah.
You're yeah. the prettiest thing in Afghanistan.
The one thing they don't have going for them is air quality, but the sights are there to see.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a great tourist location.
Yeah. No, there are some natural wonders there for sure. So I suppose the first question is,
yes,
was the first time you went there, the first time you went somewhere extremely dangerous?
The first time I went somewhere extremely dangerous was my, actually just exiting my house in Birmingham. But I would say abroad was, I went to Chernobyl, that was my first time abroad.
Oh, really?
In Ukraine, yes, because it was rather cheap. I was studying physics at the time, wanting to study nuclear physics. And, you know, I just thought, I'll go to Chernobyl. And it was £200 for the entire trip. Did a tour in 2018, lovely stuff. And when I was in one of the houses in Chernobyl, I actually stepped on one of these floorboards. It gave way, and I fell down, caught myself at the waist as I was falling through the floor. And there were several pieces of metal rebar, poking up the ground. So I managed to catch myself, and it was kind of fun.
It could have been very, very nasty.
Yes, it would have hurt in the...
I'm fascinated by the Chernobyl story. There's that HBO series that came out a few years ago, which was the cherry on the cake for me. I've watched nearly every documentary I could ever get my hands on, and that one was more of a dramatisation than a documentary, but absolutely so, fascinating. I'd love to go myself.
Honestly,
when you went then in 2018, have they already built the... Because there's a new sarcophagus.
Yes.
Was that already there?
I believe so, yes. There was... Yes, it was a new one there. A big white dome, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was there, but I think they're reinforcing or adding to it. Because there's always a leak here and there.
Okay. Well, fascinating stuff. What was it that, I suppose most people, the first question is, what is it in your mind that draws you to going to Chernobyl or going to Afghanistan or anywhere like that? Because most people are just like, well, it's unnecessary risk.
That's true. But then again, most people... but everyone says I'm going to die if I go to one of these places, but I believe they've never actually lived themselves. These people, they have boring, menial lives, and if they enjoy it, all power to them. But for myself, I get rewarded for doing this stuff. I make way more than the average. I really enjoy it. I'm aiming to go down in history, and I'm on that path at the moment. And truthfully, it's just really, really fun. I mean, I've read so many documentations of soldiers who have been in wars, and they say, I would go back, I loved it. Again, some people have some very bad experiences, but a good chunk of men enjoy this adventure, this this chaos of the world. And, I found that as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. There are loads of accounts from soldiers. They say, no, it's the best part of my life.
Exactly, yes.
Loved it.
I believe, Winston Churchill said, if we didn't nuke the Japs, we could have extended the war by a few more months or a few more years and enjoy it.
Mm.
It's quite good. When I was in the fall of Kabul, I met with the British SAS soldiers, former SAS soldiers, working as private military. And they were having a great time. We were taking shots and, goofing off a little bit. It was fun.
Yeah, cool. What about you, Adrian? Well, what made you decide you would go to
Well, I haven't travelled much in my life. I've only ever really been home in Poland and here in England. And Afghanistan was the first place that I really travelled to outside of Europe. My motivation being, I saw a gap in the market for Afghan rugs. And I thought I would try and get my hands on the stuff in person. And that's how, you know, I got invited by Miles to come along and
absolutely nothing went wrong.
And see the country, do a bit of haggling, which I like to do. Turned out the way that it did.
Yeah.
But that's why I went. It was for rugs.
And that was much later than your first, time you went.
I believe that was my fifth trip, your first, yes?
Yes, something
that
like
sounds
that.
Sounds about right.
So on your long internment, if anyone doesn't know,
oh, was that eight month holiday in Taliban prison? Yes.
Was that the first time you went there?
Fifth.
That was the fifth. Oh, right. Okay. So you'd been there. They must have known who you were to some degree.
Yes. That was their concern. They thought I was something I was not.
Right.
So
a spy.
Yes. First time I went there, fall of Kabul by accident. It happened around me, made me well known. I said, okay, well, I've got a little bit of an audience. I'm going to do this now instead of for a job I wanted to do. And then I went back a few times and said, you know, this is very fascinating. I'm at the start of a brand new country, a brand new system. I just want to check out the country. There's so much stuff to see, but so little time. And then I started doing some business affairs, selling flags, selling gems, selling rugs, Taliban merch of all things. It actually sells really well. Yes, still do that to this day.
When you say the fall of Kabul, you're not talking 2001.
No, no.
You're not old enough for that, surely.
No.
What do you mean when you say the fall of Kabul?
It was 2021. I guess we can call it the rise of Kabul then.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Oh, right. When the
when
the Taliban came back, essentially.
Yes. When the United States pulled out, yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, you know, when the... Yeah. If you don't mind me, how old are you?
25. The hairline says 40. 25. But 2001, I would be, 1 year old. One or maybe two.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, so a whole different... Well, because, of course, I was... I'm so old. I was 19, 20 years old at that time. So, like, sort of already at uni, undergrad. So, fully in the light of my memories.
So, you're in your 40s now?
Yeah, early 40s.
Oh, you don't look it. Do teach me
thank you. That's very kind.
Have you got any cream you recommend?
So from my memories, it's like the actual war zone. Like, full-blown...
Oh, yes.
Loads of sniper stuff going on.
Yes.
Loads and loads of big ordnance being used.
Bombs.
Bradleys, Abrahams, all sorts of stuff. But by the time you're there in like the 2020s,
yes,
or the late 2010s, it would be a completely different beast by that point.
Yes, everything was boiling over, about to erupt. Everyone believed at the time when I booked the trip, and actually a few days into my arrival, they were like, no, Afghanistan is fine.
So it's your first time you went?
Yes, right, everyone. Yeah. Oh God, I booked it 6 months in advance, so I couldn't have known. And every single analyst, every single journalist, government official was publicising, Kabul's going to be fine, they're going to take back Afghanistan, the Afghan National Army is, the Taliban aren't going to win, Kabul's very safe. It's even recommended for tourism in some articles, some YouTube videos, and... I thought, yeah, why not? I might as well pop down. And then 2 days in, Kabul's going to fall in 72 hours, we believe. And we're like, oh dear.
Right.
So it was the worst or actually the best possible timing for me to go. Yeah. Completely random picked.
I remember seeing, because you're friends with Callum, and I remember I wouldn't be aware of you otherwise at that point.
He's a lovely fella.
And yeah, of course, yeah. And you just found yourself in the middle of it, really.
Yes.
Just right place, or as you say, wrong place, at the right time.
Exactly. My RAF... my RAF flight, my evacuation flight, actually took me to Swindon, which is how he managed to come meet me. I was in a quarantine hotel due to COVID, and so we just waved out the window at each other.
All right.
Yes. Love at first sight, you know.
But you was there later, like a year or two later.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was last year that we flew out. It was in February of last year that we went.
We were friends beforehand as well.
Yeah, we knew each other for, almost a year, probably at that point.
Maybe a year and a half, I think.
A while,
so
basically.
We'll get into that. So the first time you went then,
yes,
it was just before the Taliban when they're fully their own government.
Yes.
And then whilst you're there, it flips.
Yeah, we get the announcements, the Taliban are threatening to take Kabul. I go to my driver, my tour guide at the time, hey, let's go to the airport real quick, and we take this route that goes over this mountain and loops back around to avoid the traffic that was congestion. And as we're travelling over this mountain, we see several Taliban convoys coming up. They're shooting at us, thinking we're maybe military or whatever. I'm like, oh dear, we start driving away very quickly. People are abandoning cars, people are shooting guns up in the air to try and get the right away of traffic. I saw a few people get trampled, and I'm having to run to the embassy, to the airport. All flights get cancelled. I try to book a flight on my phone, and my car gets declined due to suspicious activity. You know, right. Booking a flight in Afghanistan. Cool. So I have to call up my bank and say, hey, listen, the Taliban are coming. Please put my payment through. Thanks. Yeah. Hang up. Get to the airport and everything's cancelled.
Right.
Yes.
Well, like Kabul airport?
Yes, yes.
Bloody hell.
Look, I mean, back in the day, holy destination.
Even that, I remember back in 2002 or whatever, that's a battle scene.
Kabul airport, it really was, isn't? Yes.
So at that point, were you scared or is it still exciting? Or
no,
a bit of both?
No, I have a very strong conviction in God. I wasn't scared. I was enjoying it, but I understood the seriousness of it. I wasn't going, oh, right. You know, I'm going to run into the danger and take selfies. I'm like, oh, bloody hell, I'm going to enjoy it for what it is, but I need to bloody find somewhere safe or right. Get to a compound, perhaps, or whatever.
Right.
So I started wandering around Kabul. At this point, it's abandoned, it's desolate, everyone's closed up shop, you know. But I see a big crowd of people around this compound near Baran Camp, this hotel area that's been used as a makeshift compound. And there's some Turkish security guards outside, and they say, no, only Turkish people are allowed in. And I go to them and say, hey, listen, I'm not Greek, don't worry. And they start laughing, and they let me in from that only. Right. There was a huge crowd around us, you know, holding the passports up. I get in, and they give me Wi-Fi, first thing they give me. I go to my room, I start live streaming the entire thing. Not showing the outside, not causing any problems, but I just tell everyone what's happening. Gets a lot of immediate attention.
Yeah.
Knock on the door, SAS commander is at the door.
Right.
And he's like, oh, you know, hello, lad. Don't film anything outside. Just be careful, just be careful. But, enjoy your stay. We're going to get everyone out. Just, you know, don't report the location or anything like that. I'm like, okay, yeah. That's cool.
Okay.
And then there's some other soldiers walking up, private military, ex-SAS as well, and they go, you're that Lord Miles guy from that live stream. We've all seen it. Everyone's talking about it. Come up and have a drink with us. So then I started doing shots with the SAS. They put me in level 4 plates, weapons and everything, and we're just having a laugh. I film it. It's quite fun.
Mm.
Lightens the mood a little bit. You know, I'm convinced at this point, you know, they're going to kill us. We have no idea about the Taliban's intentions.
Mm.
At 1.2, the Taliban, they saw me wandering around outside and they cornered me. This is before I got the compound. They cornered me and, you know, they go, where are you from? Are you English? And they look very angry. You can tell they're not fans of the English. And I go, no, listen, I'm Welsh. And they go, Welsh? What Welsh? I was like, small country, occupied by the English. I'm not Welsh, by the way. I'm not. And I go, one struggle, brother, both occupied, you know, on your side. And they look at me like, hey, this guy's okay. Pat on the back, enjoy the hard end, off you go.
The Welsh Taliban connection.
One struggle, you know. Well, we both enjoy sheep at the end of the day.
There's that classic thing, there was the, they made that film, The Last King of Scotland, about Idi Amin. Someone like Idi Amin could relate with the Scotsman.
Yes.
Because they've both got beef with Englishmen. So, yeah, you pulled the exact same trick.
You've got I didn't know about that at the time, but honestly, you just got to realise, hey, what are these people's motivations? What do they like? What do they dislike? Same with football teams. If you associate one side, you can get out of a bad situation. You know, it's imperative not to lie to people. It's easier to tell the truth. But if you're in a dangerous, life-threatening situation and you think you can weasel your way out of it, it's probably best.
Right, yeah, no, of course. I mean, I suppose my worry, or most normal people's worry, would be that at that sort of situation, yes, where they've cornered you, they just simply bundle you in the back of their Toyota and get beheaded.
Yeah, beheaded, got raped, tortured even. Right, they could have done that stuff.
Yeah.
But thankfully, they had an idea from theirs. They call him the supreme leader, the head of the Taliban, that we're not going to harm any foreigners. We actually want to build a country at this point. We want to give up on jihad mostly, you know, or maybe play the long game, whichever their tactics are, but foreigners won't be harmed. But you guys can obviously do your due diligence on anyone walking around.
Mm, mm.
So.
Hmm. Well, it's remarkable.
Yeah, bloody hell. I mean, at least it wasn't boring, to put it lightly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you go to anywhere else? I know you've been to loads of other places yes. that are sort of quite dangerous. But would you go to full-blown war zones? I mean, yeah. for example, like southern Lebanon right now, or the Donbass region.
I've been to Donbass a few times. I keep going to Ukraine every single Christmas to just unwind a little bit. I've been to the front lines of Ukraine.
Front lines?
Yes, again, level 3 plates, M16. I got embedded with some frontline soldiers. I forged a press pass and made friends with them through there. That's how I got through all the checkpoints. Right at the beginning of the war, like one day after it happened.
Okay. So a while ago now?
Yes.
But I keep going. 5 years ago or whatever.
God, yeah, it doesn't feel like that, does it? Right. It feels so fresh in my mind. But no, I've been to the front lines, done some filming there, just documented it all. My third friend of I who got us in trouble in Afghanistan, we bought a car with him and we drove from Poland and drove refugees in and out of Kharkiv and Donbass, in and out basically, and some supplies. So we try and do some good work as we go. But
You should mention that at the beginning of the war, about a week before the war began, you flew in expecting it to happen. Yeah, you were all ready to record. Yeah. And nothing was happening, so Miles decided to fly back because, you know, the Russians like to do these exercises on the border. Yeah. And I think the day after you came back...
The day after I came back, I got a message from a random Israeli account who follows me, works in a think tank. He said, "Hey, Miles, the invasion's going to happen on this time, this date." And it was exactly correct. A few days in advance. The day I got back, wake up at 6 a.m., whatever, 50 missed calls. Oh, things have popped off. Like, bloody hell, okay, back I go.
We're back over. This next question we can cut out in post if you don't want it, but
go on.
How do you pay for all this?
Taliban merch sells very well,
but that's enough. More money enough. From your channel.
Well, channel I've taken a hiatus off,
right?
But we're gonna start reposting weekly uploads, higher quality, in beginning of December. So sponsorships for YouTube channels could be anywhere from 10k a month or more. Taliban merch can make up to 20k a month. What else? Donations
a month?
Yes, donations. To be fair, it can go down as like 5 or 6k depending on the videos and the advertisements. Donations a month for $1,500 British, and then what else? Book sales too. X ad revenue.
Yeah, oh, various.
It's like I'm incentivized to do this. You know what I mean?
MI6,
various income.
FBI,
MI6, FBI, Mossad. Yeah, you call him Mossad Miles. You know.
What's the Pakistani one?
ISI. I met ISI. They're lovely.
That's why you're posting so much about India. Paying you off.
I definitely want to ask you about the intelligence services, but I suppose let's go on to just before we go on to like the incarceration bit.
Yes.
So you've been to Afghanistan like 4 or 5 times before that.
Yes.
I guess were you thinking now? I've got this, you know, I've done this a number of times. I'm comfortable. I know what I'm doing. I'm not in any real danger. They must know who I am. If they were going to do anything to me, like abduct me and behead me, they would have done it by now.
Yeah, I mean, I know at this point, you know, they're not beheading tourists randomly, obviously. Right. I would have better sense to go there. But I'm like, okay, well, you know, things aren't perfect. You need some knowledge beforehand before going to certain regions. Probably want a translator, you need to get some permits. Yeah, I've done that, I've done it a few times. I feel like I'm more comfortable than I was going in the beginning, which makes sense. And at that point, I was like, you know, Afghanistan just fell. It isn't totally sanctioned, it's like half sanctioned. And so you can start to do some business there. And the US Geological Survey showed that there's $3 trillion worth of minerals in Afghanistan. And they're not hard to reach. You know, there's, for example, in Ghazni province, there's $300 million worth of gold there. And you think, God, you know, $3 trillion just dotted around, no one's doing anything with it. The Taliban are desperate for some business. And, you know some investors, I used to work in this field. Maybe I can do some research for this one area, take some photographs, take some samples, go back to England and, you know, do some reports and go fishing for an investor, you know, look around. And I go there and, you know, this is when you come.
Yeah, so my thinking was, you know, a lot of the, you know, I guess you could call it like the gig economy of Afghanistan was making these commemorative carpets and selling, you know, gemstones and things like that to American and NATO soldiers that were stationed there. My thinking was that since those soldiers are now gone, and Afghanistan doesn't really have neighbors that you can trade those things with. If I went there, I could snag some nice Afghan carpets and sell them back home. I noticed that still ongoing, there's kind of a, the you know, Persian carpets and Indian carpets are becoming very fashionable. You can even find them in IKEA now, or at least, you know, a year ago, I remember seeing them in IKEA and I thought, you know, you could make some money off of this. So my idea was to fly over there, make some connections with rug wholesalers and then start shipping them to Europe. Yeah, that's why I went there. I went there for carpets. I wasn't really thinking that big. Yeah.
Honestly, so what was different about this time then? Well, what do you know?
Well, we know what happened. Yeah. It's a bit murky exactly what it was, but
It's a multitude of things. So
yeah,
the Russians contacted the Taliban and said, "Hey, this guy keeps going to the front lines of Ukraine and maybe he's trying to do something here. Maybe he's trying to sell ex-military gear to Ukraine. Maybe he's like some sort of weapons dealer." So the Taliban go, "Okay, well, interesting, but we don't think so, but it's noteworthy." Taliban GDI is Taliban intelligence. And then they see me in a hotel, and there's two other British men staying in that hotel, both are former SAS, and they're working private security, earning 10-20k a month just security for some one random hotel. Doesn't really add up, you know. It seems a bit something else is going on there, to put it lightly. And they raid this hotel and they find weapons, and they find like a booklet full of, you know, intelligence regarding ISK and all these other terrorist organizations in Afghanistan. They go, "Well, you know, you don't have authorization to have this stuff. Why are you here? You're basically spies. We're going to imprison you until we can do something." So they imprison those two men. Because I'd stayed in the same hotel, they go, "Oh, wow. Lord Miles, who's saying, you know, kind of semi-positive stuff about Afghanistan, he must be connected. It's a perfect cover. Perfect reason to keep going back. Jeez, he's not a businessman. He's a Fed. So, you know, we're going to arrest
British
him."
Fed.
Yeah, he's MI6. He's right. MI5. He's right. Mossad. I don't know. He's something.
Right.
And plus, oh, well, we've seen he went to this province with all this gold and took some photos. He doesn't have a permit for that. And of course, you need endless permits in Afghanistan. Yeah. Yeah. You know how it is. Bureaucracy from the Soviet days. But they were like, you know, it's enough reason to bring these people in.
Mm.
So halfway through our trip, right, we're driving.
Well, this was toward the tail end of my trip. I was supposed to go back home the day before that we got caught. But we decided, you know, we'll stay in a hotel and I'll book a flight and I'll be out of there once we get back to Kabul. And so we were driving back, and Miles decides that he's going to stay a bit longer than me and our friend. So he withdraws some money from
Western Union.
From a Western Union. And this is seen as suspicious. So
$1,000.
As we're pulling out and driving down the road, you know, with like tuk-tuks and stuff around us, all of a sudden a bicycle pulls out in front of us, and there's two men on the bicycle, you know, the driver and a guy behind who has an AK, and he swerves around, points the AK at the car. The driver hops off with the pistol. And, you know, there's, how many of us, six of us in this four-seater car, yeah. five-seater car.
Remember, he pulls out the...
Yeah, he has a pistol, and he pushes in to sit with us in the back, and he's pointing the pistol at us, and he's telling the driver, you know, follow the bicycle.
So you were under surveillance. They were watching you. They didn't
Clearly.
Yeah, they were like, you know, this is the time. It seems like they may be going back to Kabul. We don't want to lose them, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, and from that, we drive to this local compound where they tell us, you know, they check our documents, they say, you know, everything's fine, but there's a recurring theme. They say, "We're just gonna have to wait for the boss to come and clear you, because we don't have the the authority to clear you after we've apprehended you." And so we say, okay, you know, this was in the morning, probably like 10 a.m. or something, and we're being treated nicely, so we figure the boss will be here any moment now to come and release us. We had to wait for him quite a while, it turned out.
Yeah.
So we ended up sitting in this compound all day. Ended up being like 10 or 11 p.m. And they tell us, you know what, guys, the boss, he just can't make it here right now, but he's going to be in Kabul today. So what we're going to do is we're going to take you guys from here. We're going to drive you 2 hours to Kabul. And there the boss is going to be waiting, and he's going to be able to clear you and release you.
Okay.
don't know if I should keep going. Yeah. And so what happened is, by then we've made friends with the Taliban. I think one photo that Miles has posted a couple of times of us standing in front of
some wonderful selfies. They're like, giving us some food. They're showing us memes on their phone. It's lighthearted.
Yeah, there's a photo that Miles has taken of us in front of a Taliban flag that was taken then.
There's three of us, by the way.
They give me some perfume, things like that. You know, they were treating us amazingly. And the boss comes in and he says, we're going to have to take you to Kabul to clear you. And we're getting out. There's a big group of people around us now. You know, we've made so many friends. They show us their bicycles. They do wheelies in front of us. And they decide, okay, well, Miles, you're going to go in the cool Taliban Toyota pickup truck. You two, you're going to go in the small sedan. You know, we're going to separate you in case one of you tries to run away. We'll be able to... I'm not going to say what they said, really. Not enough room. It was strange because there was a lot of lightheartedness, but at the same time, there seemed to be something else going on. In hindsight, in the moment, it was just,
we've been stopped at checkpoints for like hours at a time before because they just want to check everything. Do their due diligence. The process is very slow, but this time we're like,
So
starting to think something's amiss.
Yeah, we think something's happening. We're like, we don't know, but what can we do? We have to roll the bits. We have to be on our best behavior, whatever. And
what ends up happening is, we start driving to Kabul. It's a very long drive. It's nighttime. The Taliban have a habit of using these powerful like lasers to show people that they're coming. There's like green laser pointers. And they would shine them in the eyes of the drivers, of oncoming drivers, so that there was a Taliban coming through. We're driving. We end up stopping for some food. Miles, out of the kindness of his heart, he pays for the food for all the Taliban because we're thinking, we're being released. They were so kind to us.
Yeah. And we got free taxi.
So he pays for everyone's food. It was a funny incident where, I'm sat across from some Taliban. And they sit down across from me, and they put their gun down, their Kalashnikov, and the way they put it down is it's facing me, like the barrel.
Yeah, no safety
now,
on.
Now these guys don't have safeties on. They have bullets in the chamber because they don't care, and the gun's pointed at me. I don't know how well maintained it is or anything, so I shove out the way a little bit, and the guy nudges his friend, and he moves the AK, so it's pointing at me again.
They're like, oh.
Yeah, but then he moves it. We eat the food. And we keep driving.
We're wearing Taliban shoes, remember?
Oh, yeah, we're wearing the Taliban sneakers.
Yeah, they have their own brand sneakers, yes. That's one thing I was exporting, Taliban sneakers. So I'm wearing it, I'm like, Talib. And they're like, oh!
That is one of the things that seems quite striking about it, is that they're not like these...
super.
They're not
serious.
Like something out of the 8th century. Or yeah, they're not like early... Well, wait, I mean, they are in some ways, of course. But what I mean is... Like they wear sneakers and they have phones they want to pop wheelies on a bike and they're not just because you sometimes I think some I would used to you think of like the most extreme sort of ISIS theocrats they're not necessarily that right
no thank no. God they actually hate ISIS at this point so they had a little war
or just
ISIS.
Being extremely strict where you can't laugh you can't dance you can't play sport you ISIS, can't do ISIS, they're not like that right?
ISIS will kill you if you got to use fireworks to celebrate the birth of a baby or something that's been known to happen. These lads are just like showing us TikToks and then they're scrolling on TikTok you see them see a beautiful girl and they're like oh
and you're like and they're like ah they hide it
obviously they're not like they're not our best friends of course not but they're lads at the end of the day. You can find that common ground. You can bounce off them. You can, have a laugh sometimes.
Because sometimes when you think of, say, sort of a hyper strict ISIS member or a 15th century Puritan or something, where everything is about prayer and everything is about being as strict as possible with, they're not, it's not that. And I find that surprising because people might think that's what it is.
No, they aren't those people from Birmingham. God, no.
Right. Right.
They're
still
actually,
trying to live their lives.
Yeah, exactly. Again, you probably do get the ones who are just really extreme, and you get the ones who are just very liberal with things. Like it's a weird in between.
Right. But so, did you get to Kabul then?
Oh, so
they took you to Kabul.
On the after we've eaten, we keep driving a little bit longer, and we end up stopping again and say, "Oh, do you want to you use the bathroom, you want to pee? And we're like, yeah, sure, you know, we relieve ourselves, and we come back, and they say, the boss gathers us, and he says, there's just one thing I need to tell you guys, we have a policy, because we're taking you to one of the main compounds in Kabul.
Super duper secret.
We can't, you know, we can't have you seeing the inside of it, you know, the security and how everything works. So we're going to, while we're driving there, we're just going to have to cover your eyes so that you can't see the inside of the
bags
compound.
Bags over your head.
And so what they do is they put bags over our heads and they tie our arms. And we're thinking, oh, man, we're about to get driven out to the desert and shot. Yeah, this is it.
We're just like, oh, no.
That's it.
And I mean, you're laughing about it now, but should we really shook up at the time?
No, I was laughing at the time. We were laughing. We have a selfie of it.
We'll send it to you. My last photo that I took in Afghanistan was me with a bag over my head and my arms tied together doing a thumbs up.
And at the same time, too, my bag is like light pink and I can see through it. So as we're being taken to the compound, I'm like, ah, Ghazni Street. I just saw the Russian embassy. We're close there. And they're just looking at us like, this fucking guy. I'm like, wow, this ex-school. Oh, I know exactly where we are, guys. Yeah. We're like, shut up.
Did they not?
It was like a skit.
It was...
Well, you didn't actually think then that you are being taken to a basement where you're going to be slowly
in the back of our minds, like maybe for a second.
Yeah, we couldn't let ourselves believe this. You know, we were like, no, things are going to be fine. Yeah, like, again, you would think they would be so kind, but you know, it was like somewhere in between what actually happened. So we get the bags taken off, and then suddenly here.
Tell the whole whole thing. So we end up getting to the destination. They get us out of the car, and now me and our friend, we don't see anything, right? Mm. So I'll just tell it from my perspective. I get out of the car, I've got the bag over my head, and I'm being led by someone, and I can hear Miles and our friend, you know, saying things, talking. They lead us up some stairs, through a door, and we know we're inside. After that, they, you know, lead us down a corridor and then into a room. And once we're in the room, we hear dun 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 dun, click click, and they rip the bags off our heads, and we're in a jail. Uh-oh. And that was that.
Right.
And they said, boss isn't coming today. Boss will be here tomorrow. And
inshallah.
And they. And that's it.
Yeah.
And
we were like, uh-oh.
That was day one.
But, yeah. God. And we realized too, we're in with several other people. Very small jails. So it was like a holding cell, and you know, the toilet was a hole in the ground. No toilet paper. You know. No real sunlight, artificial office lighting, and everyone's sleeping shoulder to shoulder on the floor. And they're like, oh, you know, if you goof off in the middle of the night, it's not good. And, you know, they'll come in and they'll tell you off. And we're like, ah, geez, okay. So we sleep and we're panicking a little bit, but we're like, okay.
Yeah, it
Boss may be coming tomorrow, whatever, we'll just wait for tomorrow, we're tired. Like, yeah,
it was the place where we were being held at the beginning. It was a converted old...
I'll put the exact coordinates on screen.
Russian interrogation facility. So if you can imagine, I was in the center of it. There was an interrogation room, and there were just these holding cells, basically within kind of that could be closed, and they were part of a little big room that could also be locked from the outside. And in each of the rooms...
Room 101. We worried. Yeah. To be perfectly honest, at that point, I'd be slightly...
Yeah, we were slightly concerned.
Slightly less worried than... The point for me, which is much more scary than that, is when you're still... When they say, we're going to put hoods on you and cuff you. Because when you're in an actual jail, you're in some sort of judicial process, or at least hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas when you're just with some God knows who dude in the middle of the open, but they're putting hoods on you and tying you up, that would have been... I would have shit my pants. With the jail thing, I'm like, oh, at least I'm in jail.
Well, actually, we did.
Okay, at least I'm in jail.
Speaking of shitting my pants, I didn't shit the 14 days because I refused to use the bathroom without toilet paper.
No.
Yeah,
you're lucky.
When he did, he clogged the toilet.
Of the Taliban compound, and we had that.
They had to bring out a prisoner to clean the bathroom.
The one we don't like. We'll get on to him.
Are we going to mention him?
We will mention him. I don't care. He's still there. He's still there, by the way.
Oh, really?
American black dude, yeah.
Who threatened us and said that we were
schizophrenic, who wanted to join ISIS. Yeah, ex-American soldier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't reveal his name.
Gross.
But the next day, we're brought into a room and we're, you know, interrogated. They ask us questions and they pull. We'll skip to the okay one.
Oh, okay, so
they literally banged up abroad at this point.
Not again.
So yeah, they started interrogating us, and this was a couple days in, I think. I don't think this was on the second day.
Yeah, because it was a Thursday, and that's a holiday for them. Like,
yeah,
holiday,
so a couple days in, we all get taken to a room together. Was this when the boss finally arrived for the first time?
Yes. So the boss finally arrives. He's like very kind. He walks in smiling. What do you want? What do you guys need? Do you need toothbrush, toothpaste? Do you want like a book? What do you need? And I'm just like, yeah. And they're like, oh yeah, no problems. We'll give it to them. Very happy with this news, but we're like, you know, obviously want a little bit more. But he started interrogating us.
Oh yeah, before the M16. Before they started, I don't know why. Maybe just to show off their collection, they decided to bring in like an M16. to show us, or maybe to see how we'd handle it. I'm not sure.
They want there's like a good 10 of them in the room. A bit tiny. Yeah,
with because obviously the boss that we've been waiting for is
the
there.
Head of foreign intelligence of the Taliban.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
one of the so it's a big cheese.
Great
yeah.
man. He's a great guy.
Very interesting enough.
They bring in this M16 and they say, "Careful, it's loaded." And they're passing it along.
Yeah. And they go,
you know, we're kind of, I'm looking at it, you know, oh, I've never held a gun in my life. You know, I'm a civilian.
I pick it up, and then, 3-point turn.
Miles grabs it. He tries to cock it and just puts it on his head and presses the trigger.
What happens is they say, they say, want to check if you're like a soldier or not. How would you check if it's loaded or not? And everyone, you're like, I don't know. Other guy's like, yeah, I don't know either. I get it. 3-point check. I go, I'm holding it. I don't feel the weight of a loaded gun. So I turn off the safety, point the roof of my mouth, click. And of course it doesn't go off and they're all shocked. Then I point it at the head of foreign intelligence, click. And I go, it's a loaded. Why did you lie to me? There's dead silence, dead air. And then suddenly, oh, he's slapping his knee laughing. And then everyone else starts cackling, broke the ice completely. They go, oh, Abdul, get the cake, get the milkshakes, get what they want. This is hilarious.
Yeah, then they end up bringing in an RPG.
Oh, yeah.
And they tell us...
just to show off again.
It's trigger mechanism.
Yeah. They tell us we've actually modified. So no, before they bring it in, they're saying, so we've actually managed to build a rocket. And this rocket can fire 2,000 miles. And we're like, holy shit.
Whoa.
Taliban have got ICBMs.
Yeah.
This is crazy. And they call a guy over and he brings in an RPG and we realize that what he was talking about is the RPG and he says, this can fire 2,000 miles.
Not accurately.
We modified it, it can fire 2,000 miles.
2,000 meters.
Yeah, I think it goes that way.
Yeah, Miles did another thing where he started hitting it on the ground.
Yeah, he said the cap. It was the head of foreign intelligence. He goes, you see the RPG rocket? This little dot here is a trigger mechanism. If you hit this hard enough, it explodes. And if it explodes here, it will kill us all. He goes with his metal bedside frame. He's just smashing against there. All the Taliban are running out of the room. We're just like, oh! He's like, I got you. You point gun at me. I joke with you.
All right.
And we're just like, this guy's crazy, man. We kind of find him funny. Like, we can't not like him.
Weird.
And he starts asking us over interrogation questions. So, of course... You two at the time were in school, so Adi and my friend were in school, we're doing engineering. They give us
They give us engineering equations to solve to prove that we're actual engineers.
Were you able to?
Guess
was
what?
It easy? Yeah. Were they easy enough?
They were basically these really convoluted equations with a bunch of brackets in them that ended with times zero.
So of course it would always be zero.
It was pretty...
Right.
Yeah. Those were the tests that they ran.
You were given the test and then... You say zero, and then they would look at each other, pull out a calculator, and go, he's right.
And another thing was...
They just really wanted to ascertain who the hell you are. Really.
Yeah.
They just want to make sure you're not, like, ex-SAS or an actual MI6 dude. They just want to... I guess that's...
Yeah, they were like, we think you're a spy. Think you're here doing dodgy stuff. What are your intentions, basically?
Yeah.
And they wanted to go, okay, well, if your story makes sense... That's fine, basically.
Right.
Yeah. So what else?
But they didn't come to those conclusions quickly, though.
No, they want to do their little tests, which was a bit annoying, but...
Yeah, they would give us, like, Makarov pistols. When they handed it to me and I didn't put my finger on the trigger, the head of the jail says, I got you. How did you know to do that, to not put my finger on the trigger?
I told them,
it's common sense.
Yeah.
If you don't want to shoot, you don't put your finger on the trigger, and yeah. It was very suspicious of me after that. But yeah, they cleared us relatively quickly.
Yeah, they were like, you know, these guys are probably all right. Stick them in the nice jail. Stick them in like this house compound. Yeah, this normal house, like it's like a house arrest basically.
Yeah.
And give them a few servants, and you know, they can. You know, they don't have to suffer a bit, basically. Just give them some nice food, give them whatever, and we'll clear this up, hopefully.
Yeah, we were, after that, we were basically put into, like, a barrack for young Taliban members. Yeah. And we had, you know, 15-year-old guys taking care of us and making us food and making sure we were fed and had water to drink.
Do most people speak English, or is it a lot of dumb show stuff?
So the higher-ups spoke English, the lowers just knew, like, four words. If you said the Mir Khalifa, they would know who she was and start giggling.
Who? What?
Yeah, the Muslim porn star.
Oh, Mir Khalifa. Yeah, right, yeah, okay. Yeah. They'd know who she is.
Yeah, so I would be like, hello. They'd be like, thank you. And they'd be like, no English. Mir Khalifa. Somehow they knew.
Okay.
A little bit.
And we tried to play tic-tac-toe with them.
Oh, yeah.
Took them a while to figure it out.
Yeah.
We got there eventually.
They would just draw, like, X's over our zero, over our circles. They would just switch signs. They'd make up rules.
Yeah.
And one time they ran in after, like, I think it was like day seven. They ran in and said, oh, 1-5.
Oh, yeah. One of the Taliban members runs into our room and he says to us, what did he say?
Five women.
Five energy drinks.
5 p.m. Be you ready.
Go. Yes. 5 p.m. today.
And then we're like, what time is it? We don't know.
Wait, what's he trying to say?
We don't know if
what
to
was that mean? What does that
we
mean?
We did not get any drinks. Okay. We did not get women.
When I went back, I called him into my room with the Taliban commander. I was like, what did you mean by 5 women, 5 energy drinks? They were like, I don't know.
And they would do this every day. They would be like, we would ask them, is the commander coming today? Are we being released today?
Yes.
And they would say, yes. And then right before they would leave, they'd say, yes, inshallah.
If God wills it.
If God meaning, will, if, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. If God wills it, we will leave.
If God wills it, it's not going to happen.
So that was very annoying. Every day hearing, yes, today being released. God willing.
Because it wasn't too many days before you were released, right?
I was there only 14 days.
And
okay. That's quite a long time to me, but...
It felt like eternity.
It did feel
every
like a long time.
Every single morning, we would wake up and both of us would either say, today's the day, it's happening.
Yeah, every day, it's happening today.
This is the day. We feel it, this is the day.
Yeah.
And then our one friend, very grumpy, bit of an ass, would go, no, it's not today. I'm like, you jinxed it.
No, it's definitely not going to be today.
Yeah, you screwed it. Yeah.
You were kept in basically a house type compound.
Yeah, we had to stay in one room. We couldn't look out the windows.
Yeah, we'd have to knock to go to the bathroom, but we're good for the bathroom.
We were just hanging out for 2 weeks, basically.
Conversation dried up a little bit. We all kind of started getting worried about home. This one might have cried a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know how distracted
it is. Terrifying.
Day one, I was worried about because, you know, we're supposed to come back and, I was making my family worry.
Yeah, no, of course, yeah.
You know how we distract each other? We'd said, hey,
we'd explain movies.
Yeah, we'd say, hey, explain a movie to me. And, oh, yeah. Scene by scene. When Ali was crying, I was like, hey, explain to me the entire Fallout video game lore. And he was like, okay. And then 5 months later, he was like, I think that's about it.
it must have been. I would have been terrified. Yeah. The worry, of course, is the Ken Bigley thing. You're beheaded on camera. I mean, that would be the...
Yeah, which we...
Because you don't know...
Yeah, we spoke about this.
Because you definitely don't know, right, who you're in the power of. Mm. I mean, maybe you've met the Taliban head of foreign intelligence or whatever, but he could hand you off to who knows what kind of outfit.
I could disappear and no one... Yeah. They could... Yeah. Oh, yeah. No one checks their records. I could have disappeared. Yeah. They go, no, Miles, never seen him. But he popped in, hasn't popped out. I don't know what's happened.
No one knew what was going on for a good week.
Yeah. The only thing is, as we were being driven to the compound, I managed to connect to a Wi-Fi network really quick and send my location and, hey, something's happening, basically.
Right. Yeah, they hadn't taken your phone off of you?
No.
Oh, yeah, in the car, after they've cuffed us and put bags over our heads... I had the Taliban in the car asking me for my WhatsApp, so they were going on my phone, Right. And I was typing in their phone numbers and adding them on WhatsApp.
We were playing like anime music and stuff. Yeah, they were, my car, yeah.
They were some still text me to this day asking how I'm doing.
You lied, bro.
Yeah.
But honestly, it wasn't as bad as everyone would say. You know, you see him in movies, you're back over your head, being whipped away. Yeah, it's not as bad.
We kind of knew that wouldn't be us because even then, the Taliban were already trying to open themselves up. And, you know, there would be no reason to do something
plus,
like that.
Plus, you've legitimately not done anything wrong as well, right? You actually haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah. We didn't have a permit for one thing, which, genuine mistake, but to be fair, who could have known? Like, and
what I mean is you genuinely aren't ex-military contractors. You genuinely aren't trying to subvert their system of government.
I'm going
to
say anything
like that.
No.
But honestly, we...
And they must have twigged that relatively quick.
Yeah, to be fair, they looked through your phone. You had a joke video of Osama Bin Laden singing, what was it?
Britney Spears.
I can't remember. Fireworks. You know, it was a deep fake, like an AI thing of Osama Bin Laden singing Fireworks or Poker Face or whatever.
Yeah, another thing.
They go to Addy and they go, this, is it real? Is it him? And you were like, you said, maybe. I was just like, in the corner, just like losing it.
They were, you know, going through our phones, like image by image, and just like, you could see them. Like laughing at the memes that we had saved.
They were sending our memes through our WhatsApp to themselves. For later.
Yeah. Another thing was that they tried to delete all the pictures that I took in Afghanistan.
Right.
But because of like the way that my phone's set up, I have like a Google gallery and a normal gallery, and they deleted it from my normal gallery, but not from my Google gallery. So when we got out, I was so bummed out. I didn't have any of my holiday photos. And then I just checked my other gallery and everything was there. Which, it wouldn't have backed up because I didn't have my internet.
It's strange.
So I don't know. Yeah. But
so what happened then when they released you? How did that play out?
So the reason that I was released...
One thing we have to talk about, though.
Yeah, very important thing. One of the things that happened while we were in jail. Sorry to detract.
Day 11?
One of the last days, day 11. You know, boredom was really setting in.
Very bored.
And, you know, we had, like we said, we had access to a bathroom as long as we asked for permission to go. Miles went to the bathroom. The bathroom was horrendous. It was tiny. Keep in mind, this was a bathroom used exclusively by young Taliban guys.
Right.
They kept eating spicy food. Ooh. You know, there was, who's no one there to really clean up. No one wanted to do it. So it was, you know, sprayed with feces on the walls. It was disgusting. It was probably one of the worst bathrooms I've ever been in. And it was a squat bathroom. So just imagine them, you know, firing away. It was unpleasant. And the one comfort in this bathroom, there was no toilet paper, there was no hand soap, there was no running water. The one comfort was there was a plastic tub of scented gel balls. You know, there's small scented gel balls for bathrooms.
I guess so.
Like Orbeez, scented Orbeez, basically.
Yeah.
That was the only comfort there. And, you know, Miles, off he goes to the bathroom, and he comes back, and he's holding something in his hand, and he's very grinny and happy about it, very excited. And he shows us, he says, look what I've got. And it's one of the toilet shit-covered Orbeez balls.
Right.
And we tell him, put that away, that's disgusting. And he's like, oh, what do you mean? What's the big deal? And we're like, you know, obviously there's going to be crap on it.
It was an L, I told you.
And it was disgusting. And, you know, we eventually talk Miles into he just stuffed it under the carpet or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And we don't want to touch him for the rest of the day.
Or we just like, I don't know, we could have thrown it at the wall. It wasn't covered in shit. It was just like, you know, in that environment. It was green. I was like, it smells good because it's, you know, fragranced. And you can throw it at the wall. You can play like pink.
So just because it wasn't covered in shit.
No, it was like.
Okay, because I've got the impression it was.
Well, it was covered in particles, you know.
I'm not
Indian.
The day goes by. The next day, Miles wakes up and he's like, hey, Addy, look at my eye, because it's really hurting.
And his eyes, pink eye.
And his eye is very red, and I'm like, it looks like maybe you irritated it in your sleep.
Yeah,
and as the day goes by, his eye keeps getting redder and redder and more inflamed. And he ends up getting a very bad fever and an infection. Literally. And from that day on, I still have him saved on my phone as Shit Eye Miles. Because he put shit in his eye.
I got to go to the hospital, so I got to look outside. I memorized every single detail. I counted exactly how long the trip was, every single landmark, because again, they were using the bag over my head, which I could see through. Right. I was like, hey, can we stop by my restaurant? Like, no.
So you knew you were in the middle of Kabul?
Yes.
Is it basically in the middle of Kabul?
Yeah, right next to the Russian embassy, basically.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and then we go to the hospital, they give me chocolate milk and all this other stuff. I'm like, the idiots back at the compound don't know this hack.
All you've got to do... throw some shit in your eye and you're getting out, you're getting off the wing.
One thing that Miles missed out on, because he got his chocolate milk, but we managed to meet with a lot of ministers before he did.
Also remember what our friend did. What he did wrong, what he's told them.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking you might want to disclose, if you want.
Well, we had a third friend with us. This friend I was friends with since like 2019. You know, I paid for his trip to Afghanistan because he's going 50-50 in the gold mine. All I said was, hey, listen, you're doing a PhD in chemistry. You can handle this stuff with the geological data. Just write up the share agreement 50-50. You know, let's do this business together. The day before we were about to go, he tries to cancel the trip. I'm like, no, I've paid for everything. And everything rides on you coming with us. Like, you need to come. And he's like, oh, fine. I'm like, if you wanted to cancel, you could cancel a year ago. Mm-hmm. When we planned this, we've been planning this for ages. This is how we can make... life-changing amounts of money if we make this business work. Yeah, he got cold feet. He puts it out. It's very strange. Like, but he was a good friend up to that point. So I'm like, I'm just nervous. And then apparently during the interrogations, the Taliban showed me an audio recording and it was proven what they said was true. He went to the Taliban and told the Taliban, I think Miles is a spy. If I tell you the details, can I go? And they're like, yeah, sure. I'm like, what? I find out afterwards. I hear his voice, his exact voice, saying this type of stuff on the audio recording. I'm like, no. So, of course, they kept me. I would have been out in maybe 3-4 weeks. Yeah. But they kept me for 8 months because he sold me out for something I didn't do to save his own skin.
For nothing.
During
these interrogations, it's not like we're being threatened.
That's
or anything.
Crazy. That could have got you killed.
Oh, yeah. Seriously, yeah.
Really easily got you killed.
I mean, they are allowed to execute, spies and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And,
imagine they wouldn't think twice about
it. At the point at which he said that, we were already cleared. Like, this was...
worst possible timing didn't make sense. He wasn't stressed on, by the way. He was on propranolol, which is an anti-stress drug he was taking for some reason. So, he's high most of the time, just sleeping these days off, not a care in the world. And I'm just there, stuck in isolation for 8 months and worrying what's happening, no outside world contact, no conversations. Because this guy, even I paid for his holiday and got him into this business, which he asked for, by the way, it was his idea to go to Afghanistan and do this. He sold me out just because he got nervous and wouldn't stick next to me if I did nothing wrong.
I take it you're not friends anymore?
No.
All right. Yeah, that's terrible. That's really bad.
With friends really like these.
Yeah, we're friends now, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So they let you go?
Yeah, they let us go because what they told us, the Taliban told us, was that the Polish government was putting a lot of pressure on them to release us because of the EU consulate that's in Kabul. In Kabul, they are able to kind of be more diplomatically present for us. Whereas with Miles, as soon as we got out, we were told by the EU that the British government's basically not doing anything for Miles.
Yeah, there's really two men in prison.
And it's not
former
looking,
SAS soldiers.
The prognosis is not very good. So it was...
Because were the SAS dudes in trouble? Like,
yeah,
they
full on had classified information. Right. You know those security reports you get every like 2 weeks from some agency that basically says, hey, ISK are believed to be here. This is what all the information we have. They had that on their body. They had illegal weapons in the hotel. Right. They were like, yeah, these guys are spies. Makes perfect sense.
So you were raised in Britain, but you're what, half Polish? Or
No.
Your deal with Poland?
So I am Polish. By blood and also by citizenship. And I came here when I was, very young, like 10 years old or something like that.
All right.
And I've...
But your passport's Polish passport?
But I have a Polish passport,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I see.
So that's my relationship with Poland.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. A big Polish.
So we were, you know, we were EU citizens, and
other friend was Italian, and was he Italian or Canadian citizen?
Yeah. And so at the time, what was Boris Prime Minister? Was that what it would be?
No, it was. I don't know.
Or Theresa May, possibly.
This is only last year, technically. So, God, we went for a free prime minister.
Last year in March is when this would have been.
Mm.
That's when we released.
I thought it was longer ago than that. I mean, you guys should know, but okay. So they let your friend and you go.
Yeah.
But you're just. I mean, how did that play out when they said, "Yeah, go off, you"?
I noticed.
We need to talk to you.
Towards my friend. My friend was towards me, being very, very cold, and he was like, "Oh, you know, we're going now. Bye, bye, Miles." Like, they didn't say goodbye.
This was
on the last day.
The whole debacle
I'm
eye.
I'm still sick.
So Miles was very sick after the whole eye thing. I was giving him eye drops every day multiple times. Like, I was taking care of him, basically.
I just stopped eating completely.
Very sick.
Yeah.
He got a little depressed.
I knew what was happening.
Yeah, he was feeling miserable.
It's going to be a long stay. I thought multiple years in my head. I was like, you read about this. I've read about this multiple times.
Yeah, so they tell us, you know, you guys are going to be going today. And you know, I'm telling Miles, oh no, you're going to be released too,
The last thing you said to me, yeah.
Yeah, so they come pick us up, we grab our stuff, and, you know, I tell Miles, you know, make sure you use these eye drops, this is this.
I'm lying on the
and
floor.
I tell him, you know, stay strong, you're not going to be in here too long, maybe a couple of days or weeks, and you'll be released with us. It's just the British government is being too slow, you know, like...
And my last words to Adrian were, yes, 7 minutes, felt back asleep.
Said, just a couple of days or weeks, I will see you soon. And he said, yes. And that was the last thing he said to me.
My other friend just didn't say goodbye. Like, he just left.
Felt miserable.
I gave you guys a note too. I snuck
can't
you guys a note.
Can't believe he did that.
Yeah, we've managed to find, so the carpet you could lift up, and we've managed to find, like, piece of paper, which we use for tic-tac-toe. We managed to find a pen as well. So I wrote them letters, basically saying, hey, this is how you access my social media, this is how you get into my emails, this is how you get into my banking stuff. Like, I actually had a whole backup option for this. The thing was, I asked my other friend, the one who betrayed me, which I didn't know at this point, to do all this stuff, and he never did any of it. I had a folder that told him exactly what to do in this situation. Like, this is how you get into my banking, this is how you contact everyone on my credit file and tell them, hey, listen, you need to freeze my credit right now. This is who you contact within the media. This journalist will help regarding this. And this is, you know, what you do for X, Y, Z. Just everything. I knew one day something was going to go wrong with my travels because, God, you know, I'm rolling the dice here. So I thought, okay, there's something in place here. And I know my best friend will go to my house, just open this up and do these very basic tasks for me. And then, of course, they get home. He does nothing.
Why?
He just doesn't care. He wanted to wipe his hands.
He was resentful, I think. Yeah. I think he blamed...
Of what?
He blames everything on me.
He blamed the 2 weeks in jail on Miles, which I think it's a risk.
When you two were together on the way back home to Dubai, it was a flight to Dubai.
Well, he said that Miles had it coming, you know, that, like, it was very strange.
Yeah.
And considering he was on, you know, these anti-anxiety medications while he was there, it's just, like, it's a bit strange that he couldn't really handle it.
I'm not eating any food because I'm like, well, more food should go towards my best friends. And, like, seriously, part of it was because you remember you guys had eggs. I really like eggs. And I was like, no, I can't have eggs. I brought them here, telling them we may have some business and they're in this bad situation and they're hungry. I want them to have more food. I'm refusing to eat now. I feel sad.
He also ended up telling Miles that I was dead. So he was the only way that Miles could contact the outside.
What? Yeah. So occasionally the Taliban, first few weeks, the Taliban were like, okay, we're going to interrogate some more, you know. But after a few weeks of interrogations, before they told me, you know, your best friends tried to sell you out, they said, oh, you can call your call home if you want. I was like, yeah, sure. So I call, you know, the friends who sold me out. I say, hey, what's happening? And they go, yeah, Adrian had an injury, he's in hospital, and we think he's dead. Adrian's dead. And I'm like, whoa, me, you know, I'm like, whoa, my best friend's dead. One of my best friends is dead.
Because he interpreted that as I had to go to hospital because of Taliban jail.
Yeah.
So Miles, for like, what, 6 months or something.
Yeah, was like, I'm thought that he my killed best friend's me. Dead, yeah.
Why did you say that?
Yeah, because, see, it's
why?
Adrian realised that our friend's over here was a bad person, so he cut contact somewhat. And Adrian had an injury that required, like, you know, a few hospital visits, but it wasn't anything, you know, life-threathening or really serious.
Why would you say you thought you were dead?
He was just really socially inept. It was really
what,
silly.
A weirdo. Was, a weirdo. Like,
but here's the thing, too.
Very strange.
Yeah, so they would interrogate me. They said, Miles, we know you're a spy. Just admit it, we'll let you go. Nope. Miles, we know you're a spy. We actually want to learn off you. Teach us some secrets, you can go. Nope. Miles, we know you're a spy. If you don't admit it to us, the Taliban court's going to find you guilty. You go. Be killed. No. Miles, we're going to stick you downstairs in the basement and, you know, just, you know, you're going to be around, apparently underneath us, by the way, were a bunch of ISIS members who were captured, were going to be executed. So I was underground there for like 2 weeks, hearing these people obviously get, like, interrogated, you know, the way the Americans do it in certain sites, and obviously them crying for their lives, knowing they're about to die the next day or something. And of course, I don't go outside, I don't shower for like 2 weeks, I'm sitting in bed, you know, I just stop eating in general. And same integrity to me this entire time, you know, intense, but nothing dodgy. And I'm just like, no, no, not any of this. I'm adamant of it. Eventually, they pull me back upstairs and go, okay, we don't think you are. We don't think you are. The SAS guys, they admitted to some stuff. You, we don't know what to make of you. You don't fall into any category. We just found out you're saying Taliban merch. Like, what? And I'm like, yeah, it's good for business. And eventually, I talk with them and I manage to pull some strings. So I go, listen, you know why I'm here? I'm here to make money. And you guys like money. This isn't a very good way to treat a business person here. And then, like, thinking about it. Eventually, they keep coming back. And I'm like, welcome to my office. Come and take a seat. And I have the idea of I need to be overly joyous and overly positive. Because this entire place, it's a bad, you know, it's a bad situation. Everyone's depressed. They go from each room to interrogate each person of suspicion, that person screaming, freaking out, crying. Imagine what that does to you as an interrogator. You know, you start getting upset. But that one British guy who's very strategic in how he, you know, presents himself. He's a fun guy to be around. He's funny. He's honest. Yeah, you know, I think this guy's okay. We'll give him some leeway.
Yeah.
So we had.
You tried to have, you know, keep your spirits high.
Exactly, yeah, because, you know, what would, if I start freaking out of them, like, that's going to help. I need to control my emotions.
Any other guy that they locked up, everyone goes crazy.
I had a bad childhood, so I knew exactly how to, like, control myself in these situations, because I was around it a lot. And, you know, they would go to each room each day and go, you know, each week, sorry, and say, what are your needs? Do you need toothpaste? Do you need more, you know, shampoo? And the guys would say, I want a cheeseburger and I want books and I want to be free. Kill yourself, you know, just yelling at this Taliban. They'll go, whatever. Let's go to the next room. Same thing. And apparently this guy went to several prisons around Kabul. So, you know, he saw a lot. He comes into me. I'm just lying down like this, you know, just chilling. And they're like, Miles, what do you want? They think, oh, white person, really entitled. Go, nothing. And they would push it. Like, no, you have to get something. I want you to have a nice day. Thank you. And they would, like, they would just look at each other like, they would laugh over this. And then after a few weeks, they asked, what do you want? And I was like, you know, like, I would like something, Dave. Like, oh, yeah, actually, yeah, whatever you want. It must be you actually need something now. And I go, a bit bored. Can I have my money? If I had, I'll just buy some books, you know. And how about this? I buy some books for the other people in the jail. It would, you know, keep them from complaining, you know, from bitching. Don't you guys want some more peace and quiet? They're like, yeah, well, it doesn't harm anyone. And yeah, why not? Okay, so I buy some books and I'm going through like one book a day. Because imagine 24 hours free with no, just a blank room. You're like, oh, you know, reading a book a day. Each book's imported, so it costs like £5. I'm going through this. I'm like, I need something a bit better. And of course, I'm having meetings with the commander. He's still trying to suss me out of whatever I am. And I go, you know, I have a laptop in my hotel. Do you want that? You can find everything on there. I'll tell you every password. You know, you can have my laptop. He goes, where is it? I go, on one condition. And he goes, okay, if you find nothing on the laptop of suspicion, and I mean solid suspicion, you'll give me my laptop. And you know what I'm going to do with that laptop in Taliban prison? And he goes, no. And I go, you can install any software you want on it, demand to me, which is fine. You can take the laptop with you at any time. But I'm going to write a book about this experience. And you've seen the book I wrote previously. You liked it. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to say good things because you know what? I'm someone enjoying this in a twisted way. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell them you were the kind commander. That's what I'm going to call you. And he's like, he was. He really was. He's like, oh, okay. And you know what? I'm just going to distract myself so I don't keep complaining, you know? And, you know, why not? I think it'll be fun and, you know, whatever. And you guys get some stuff off my laptop. Deal? He's like, deal. Show him where the laptop is in the hotel, which was kept in a safe place. He checks it. 2 weeks later, nothing. I get my laptop and never get my $1,000 on me. And they're like, Miles, we noticed all your YouTube videos. We found them. They're pretty funny. And like, if you are genuine in what you are, we're very sorry about this situation. But, you know, someone told us you're a spy and, you know, that happens then. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. But listen, you know, innocent to proven guilty. You know, just give me some leeway here. If you have some questions, you ask me. And I'll tell you the truth and I can back it with evidence, maybe. They find photos of me in Ukraine with a gun. I go, look, no magazine in the rifle, you know. It's not loaded, it's just for photo, because guns are cool, right? And they're like, yeah, guns are cool. And I was like, yeah, one struggle. And they were like, okay, Miles, why were you in Brazil? I was like, I went to Snake Island. They're like, where's that? How many people are there? No people, snakes. Mm-hmm. I went there for fun. They're like, okay, and what's this for? Adventure. They're like, okay. And they're like, hey, Miles, why do you want to do business in Afghanistan? Kind of just fell into it, didn't I? They're like laughing. Do you find British humor really funny? And you can tell some dad jokes. I go, money. Do you like money? Yeah. I want money. Let's do some business together. So after a while, I get my laptop back. I have my $1,000. I go, listen, how about you let me spend this money on more than books and like whatever? How about I decorate this room and when I leave one day, maybe in a year, maybe in a week, you guys get this lovely room and it's fully decorated and whatever I leave behind you guys can use. Deal. And they go, okay. So I go for IKEA, I replace the carpets, I paint the walls, I put LED like fairy lights around, I get an Xbox, a TV, and they're like, yo, this is cool, we're playing Modern Warfare 3 with the Taliban on Xbox 360. It's a laugh, it passes the time lightly.
Yeah.
And then I go, okay, well, you know, this food's lovely. You know, I kind of miss food from home, you know? Can I order takeaway? And you get a little bit. And they're like, a cheeseburger. Yeah, why not?
So I mean, they could have just taken that £1,000 off of you and just done whatever they wanted.
Yeah, but they understand that I have a voice and several other people do. So when they get released, they want the Taliban to be in upstanding reputation. Yeah. In the international
community. Also goes to show that they are, you know, they're not just a bunch of hooligans or anything. Like, they are trying to have a system here.
Yeah, obviously.
And that's also one of the reasons why they couldn't release Miles for so long, because they went that far with all the, like, you know, interrogations and the accusations. And the British, it's just an awful situation. I don't understand why the British government didn't do anything.
Oh, yeah, the British government made demands to the Taliban. So I found out afterwards.
They're very funny demands. Yeah,
so it turns out, so with my laptop, I figured out there's no spyware on there, or at least hoped it wasn't. I was like, okay, I'm going to connect to some Wi-Fi. So I found out there was one Wi-Fi network nearby, because it was a house, it was a residential area. Next door, solid Wi-Fi router on 24 hours. Couldn't guess the password, though, so I said, okay, I'm going to do that later. And every once in a while, one of the Taliban members would stick on their Wi-Fi hotspot. And, of course, the password was 123456789.
Right.
So I would just enter it, access my emails, and just like send an email across or something like that to get some information. But my friend, the other one, was just messing me around. That's how I found out some bad stuff. I was told, oh, British government aren't doing much, you know, and apparently the British government are making demands to the Taliban about women's rights to get us released. I'm like, that's not how leverage works. We have no leverage.
They're telling them, you can release them if you give women the right to vote.
I can't say too much here, but I was given a welfare check by the British government. So the British government flew to some neutral position in Afghanistan. I was driven out there. They looked me over. They were like, do you have water? Do you have 3 meals a day? I was like, yeah, you know, I've got hot water, cold water, lemonade, Coke, Pepsi, tea, all this other stuff. And, you know, I got takeaway and they're looking at me like I'm some schizophrenic. They're like, this guy's under duress right here. He's making it up.
What guys were they then?
Huh?
What guys are these?
These are the British government's foreign office. So we flew out to do a welfare check on all of us.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, the other men that were beforehand, they were not in good spirits. I was like, well, they didn't play their cards right, clearly. Like, I imagine all this training is for SAS, but they just don't know how to talk. Like, it's infuriating. Yeah. And to be fair, they didn't exactly follow OPSEC, which wasn't too smart, but whatever. But, you know, I'm just, like, saying, hey, this is good. And, you know, I also British. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? And they're like, oh, we're doing everything we can. I'm like, yeah, but, yeah. Well, actually, though.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that sounds like bullshit to me. And, you know, I discussed with them. They're very rude to me. I'm actually being very polite to them. They're kind of rude. When I got out, the former SAS soldier said, yeah, these guys were assholes. Fuck them. I was like, yeah, same. So they were rude to me. And I said, hey, give me.
So the Foreign Office guys were rude.
Yeah, they were very rude. Very rude. I don't know. They were just dicks. I was like, hey, I haven't spoken to another English person in person in, like, 5 months. Like, you know, I just want some kind words, maybe. Yeah. Would help. And then I demand, I lose it. And I start like, hey, give me your email. Do you have a business card? They're like, no. I was like, write it down there. What's your email? Tell me. Like, I was commanding them around a little bit. And they were taken aback by this because I was sick of it. They were very, like, meek. And I found out their email. They wrote down a piece of paper. The Taliban go, no, you can't have it. But I see it just beforehand. Very generic email. I remember it. Go back to Taliban guest house. I go and go on my Gmail. It was Ben Livingston, I think it was. That was the username. I had an alias. And I logged into this email. I sent a scathing letter to the British Foreign Office lady. I was like, you should resign. You're not doing your job properly. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should just go away because I can actually hold the negotiations from here. Hey, maybe you should ask for an Israeli embassy and a beer fountain and a brothel if you want, because that's just as likely as your demands. What are you doing? You know, if you want me to contact the media, I will do it. You know, you've got a ticking time bomb here. I will not play the time game because, you know what, my time is precious, blah, blah, blah. I will contact this journalist right here. You have a few days to respond to me. Send. And of course, I received a message back through my friend, who wasn't my friend, you know. And they were saying, oh, Miles, don't say anything yet. I was like, well, I don't really care. Keep me in the loop what's going on, or else I was threatening the British government from Taliban prison. And of course, suddenly things moved a little bit quicker, but not as quick as it should have.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, I need to put the pressure on the British for them to act, because if it becomes a huge media event, then suddenly they're forced to actually help me out somewhat. So I was on my own section. It was ballsy, but bloody hell, it made sense in my head.
You were desperate.
They're not doing anything
like,
for you.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I'm watching this, you know, I could download some books, but again, I was really, really bored. And then at one point, I guessed Nextdoor's Wi-Fi password. It was Salim Khan 2023. And
okay.
Yeah, don't ask
How'd
me.
How'd you guess that?
Well, the name of the Wi-Fi hub was like Salim Khan something something else,
right.
But it was spelled weirdly, and I just managed to guess it. Or maybe someone, it was a 4 a.m. this happened, by the way, so I'm just doing like 400 checks a day on different iterations of what it could be. So I'm going through this systematically. Maybe someone pressed a Wi-Fi router when I was trying to connect and went through, no idea.
Okay.
But I get in and I'm like, I'm restricted internet access. I can send more than one email. I start downloading like everything I can, every single movie, because I think next door's going to notice. I'm gonna need to download as much media for entertainment if I'm going to be here for years. So I fill my hard drive. I get into Discord because I have enough time to fiddle around the computer. And I message your lady.
Yeah, messages my girlfriend saying, I'm so sorry about what happened to Andrea.
Because
dead. Yeah, I'm like, I'm so sorry. I feel overwhelming guilt. Please, I know you cannot forgive me, blah, blah, blah.
And she reads that out to me and I'm like, what?
What happened to you when you were back home, not knowing what was happening to me?
Yeah, I was getting like, I was overwhelmed with guilt. I was having like nightmares every night. Couldn't go to bed. Because I was thinking Miles was getting whipped and tortured and skinned alive or something.
Well, I may be into that.
And I was having a pretty bad time.
Were you debriefed by intelligence?
No. So when we arrived in Britain, we tried to find security at the airport. And we told them, we just came back from Afghanistan. We have information about a British citizen who's been detained there. And they tell us, we need to go check up on that. Guy goes away for a minute, comes back and goes, ah, it's fine, just go home. And that was that. That's okay. But yeah, I was having very serious survivor's guilt when I got back. I had a couple spouts where, you know, after my surgery, I was like basically bedridden, and I was given all these crazy pain medications. And what they would do is that when I took them, I would become like very like
manic.
And I'd be like, I need to fly back to Afghanistan now and now, look for mine.
Save mine.
And I'm like bedridden, like I can't do anything. I'm like, I need to go.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But once Miles got internet access, started texting us.
Right.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny.
And relaxed. Did you retain internet access for a while? It wasn't one day or whatever. You got it
3-4 months. It was just never turned off.
It was for the duration, for the rest of
God, that must have made the world of difference, right?
So I actually made friends with loads of the other prisoners, because at this point I'm friends with everyone in the compound. They're like, let me walk around the house freely. I go out for tanning sessions outside, you know. Order takeaway. They sometimes bring me into the water park and just, you know, we go on slides and stuff, go to restaurants, they take me out for like burgers and stuff. Honestly, it was kind of lovely. They were like, hey, listen, if you turn out innocent, you can come back. Like, we're very sorry, just, we'll look after you, just, you know, you understand from that point of view. I was like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it makes sense. Stockholm Syndrome aside, but, you know, never been to Sweden before.
Because they must have known then, they must have been quite confident that you're not just a spy. You're not literally an MI6 asset.
Well, we didn't.
But so why are they keeping you then?
Well, about 6 months in, they actually received a call, which they played back. It came from Denmark or something, saying, hey, Miles is a spy. Look into him more. Hang up.
What?
And it was some Afghan shouting that at them.
What's that about?
No idea. We don't know to this day. Some random guy got in contact with the Taliban and just told them, hey.
Jesus. And that prolonged your...
Yeah, they were like... Wow, that's strange. But like, we like Miles, but holy crap, we're a bit confusing here, you know. And they were just, they didn't know what to make of me, because I didn't fall into, hey, is he a businessman? Is he a YouTuber? Is he XYZ? Is he a tourist? Like, a bit of everything. So it was a new thing to them and to the Afghans.
Right.
You know, they're very straightforward people. They didn't like it too much.
Yeah.
I started putting pressure on the British government. So I logged into my X account, formerly Twitter. And then I was like, okay, well, I can't tweet as myself, because then the Taliban would see this, because they know my social media. And they'll go, well, Miles is somehow tweeting. We're going to take away his laptop, and that's my entertainment gone. And, but I can't, you know, I should invent a friend and tweet as him as the third person about Miles' situation.
Right.
And therefore I can pass on information to the world, show that information is getting out, get into the world media, and then that puts a pressure on the British government to do something. And embarrasses them, so therefore they're... Because in democracies, you know, you're pressured by the people. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. So I started posting a lot about updates. And then it really did work, because rather quickly I was released.
Right.
Yes, suddenly something happened. And we were all released from there. Maybe it was just right timing. I have no idea, obviously. But I just didn't know too much. And it also got to the point, too, where I was downloading like business documents for... I was like, okay, it's like work. I've got to do 8 hours of study for whatever I am here, like learning Pashto and Farsi and, you know, business stuff, and 8 hours of relaxing and 8 hours of sleep. Okay, it's decent. So I go with all these business documents and I'm putting together presentations for the Taliban. So when they come into my room, you know, just say, oh, how are you doing? I suddenly whip out the laptop, PowerPoint, and start like, yeah, gold and projections, figures. And then they bring me to this presentation room in the main GDI headquarters or whatever, and again, it's plugged into a projector. I have like a little pointing stick, and I'm giving like presentations. There's a few ministers turn up, and I'm like, oh, who are you? He's like, oh, the Minister of Tourism. I'm like, oh, I am Lord Miles. Slaps his hands, yeah. And it becomes a bit surreal. I'm acting with profound confidence, and it's somehow working. And they're like, yeah, Miles, we're actually really interested in this business. If you do come back, you know, God willing, you know, we'll give you everything you need for it. We'll open for business. So sorry about this situation. Let's get pink light again. But then one day, they just come in and they take my laptop, and I'm like, oh, what's happened now? And one of them said, Wi-Fi? What Wi-Fi? Where's the Wi-Fi? Like, they're arguing with each other over the tweets, so clearly they have their suspicions, but,
right.
You know, they take my laptop, and I'm like, crap. They're taking my laptop now. Oh dear. So again, I'm with these other prisoners. Some of them speak English, some don't. You know, there's some from Turkmenistan and where in Iran, whatever. And then 3 days later, I'm just released. And, you know, I get out. And oh yeah, you have the MI6 website where you can submit anonymous information?
I don't know.
No. Well, you can go to any like intelligence website, submit anonymous information. I go there and I say, hey, this is Lord Miles in Taliban prison. This is a code I use to identify myself right now. Anyway, rather lovely holiday, but I would prefer to get out. Anyway, when I do get out, please would you be so kind of having a cheeseburger waiting for me? This is my order right here. Specifically, I added to it each time. You know, I will actually pay for it. I've got money with me right now. Lovely holiday. Thank you very much, Tara. And I'm sending this email every week saying, have you know, mustard. And of course, they were probably bewildered. But you know what? When I got out and arrived in Dubai, there was a cheeseburger waiting for me. Exact order. I told MI6.
Seriously. Beautiful.
I piggy promise.
How was it waiting for you? What do you mean?
Well, there were two members of the British Foreign Office there. Two wonderful ladies. Very, very cute. As I was like, oh, wonderful. I haven't seen a woman in 8 months. And they're like, hey, would you like a burger, Miles? And I was like...
So they were paying attention?
I think so, yeah.
Well, they must have been, on some level.
It's always passive, you know, because it can't be discovered or whatever. But I didn't tell them any dodgy information. I didn't get in the middle of it. I just said, listen, you know, I'm friending... I would tell, you know, I would email the Foreign Office, like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. Then I would email MI6, like, cheeseburger, please. That's all I said, cheeseburger. And then when I got out, it had... bacon, had the cheese, it had the exact amount of patties I wanted, had the sauce. It, yeah, it was definitely, it couldn't have been a coincidence. And they were laughing about it. And then the other two SAS soldiers were there as well. We'll put it overly on screen, but one of the Taliban filmed us being released. I run up for camera and I'm just shouting, oh, I'll be back in 3 weeks, lovely holiday. And all the others were like, oh, so depressed.
Yeah, yeah.
Smaller faces.
I remember when you were getting out and you messaged me,
I'm out.
And I thought, because Miles kept going to these picnics and to the like, you know, to the various places with the Taliban, I thought he just meant, oh, I can't talk right now, I'm outside of the compound. Right. And then I think it was on the news or something that I realized, like, oh no, he's getting out. He's not out, he's getting out. And yeah, I was playing pool.
Yeah. The day I was released. I was told the night before, so I didn't sleep all night. So when I got back to Dubai, it was like I was up for like 1.5 days. I'm delirious, but I'm eating my cheeseburger, very happy. And we get back to England, and, you know, the flight's paid. I'm like, well, I'm making money at this point. You know, I didn't have to pay for a return flight. And they don't interrogate me. They don't debrief me, no nothing.
Wouldn't they want to have a conversation? Either the Foreign Office, MI5, MI6, someone.
I thought the police, special branch, someone's wanting to have
a word with you, no?
You know, once when I went to South Sudan, I got interrogated by special branch. This was like years ago, right at the beginning of my escapades. They interrogated me 3 hours in and out, nothing. I run circles around them. It was really fun. I actually enjoyed the interrogations. Because it's. There's one interrogation method, the name escapes me, but we always use the same one. But they don't do anything. I just get there and they go, okay, these two other men, the SAS soldiers, they're going to be in this room right here, and they're going to reunite with their family. But Miles, you can go. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm wearing like Afghan clothing. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, they're like, hey, do you know how to get home? I was like, yeah, that way, right? And the train station's there. Like, oh, yeah. I'm like, okay.
And they literally just...
Yeah. And I think I messaged you or someone. And I'm like, hey, oh yeah, all my bank cards have obviously been frozen or cancelled because I haven't paid the bill in like 8 months. I'm like, uh-oh. And you keep buying me a train ticket? You're like, yeah, mate.
Yeah.
And I just got back. And then I'm like, oh, that was strange. I'm like, I'm under surveillance for a while. If I go to the airport again, I'm going to be surveyed. But then I get to... Then I spend 2 days in the UK. Andrew Tate says, hey, I want to fly out to Romania, business class, go on the podcast, but you can have a little holiday. I'm like, yeah, okay, I need to start traveling again. I haven't traveled in a long time now. And then I get to the airport, nothing happens again. To be fair, it makes sense though. I'm not Muslim, I'm not a security threat, I don't really cause problems, apart from a little bit of tomfoolery.
I imagine
except the big headache.
Yeah,
that's the only problem that you cause for him.
Yeah, apart from two international diplomatic incidents.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that the FCO or SIS or whatever, it's just like, they get who you are. You are actually like a YouTuber dude trying to make some money, trying to make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
You're not actually a triple agent. You're not like, right? Yeah, no, you're not actually a worry.
I'm not telling about you. I'm
playing the war.
Yeah, I'm playing the war. 4D chess.
Yeah,
I'm not Lord of War. I'm Lord Mars.
You're actually not playing 4D chess, right?
Yeah.
And well, so I guess
to be fair, I did try and
figure
sell
that out, and they're just like, well.
Well, I did try and prospect sending weapons from Afghanistan to Ukraine.
Heavy weapons.
Like full on armored vehicles. I was like, hey, they've got loads of Humvees here. Why can't I sell them to the Ukrainians to fund the war? I can make millions. But of course, the Taliban went up for that, and I apologized. They were like, we get it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to violate the ITAR. Not really. I'm kidding. No, I tried to goof off a little bit. You know, I tried to. If I accomplished, I think the West would have been happy with it. It was just my own idea at this point. No one really cared. It was like a quick idea. The Taliban were like, yeah, whatever. Like, right. he didn't go through with anything. Who's asking around what's possible? And the other stuff, you know, then I went back 5 weeks later to Afghanistan, and, you know, I received so many donations. God, I received, like, a lot in crypto from, you know, crypto people and donations, and, God, I sold loads of Taliban merch because I went on the media. People paid for interviews. I'll tell you about one interview, remember?
Oh, yeah, there was a couple.
Yeah, that was, And, that was the whole thing. But, God, I was like, hey, I made up the yearly salary in like a week. Wow.
Yeah.
It was great. I didn't have to pay for rent for like 8 months. Incredible. And then, when I went back to Afghanistan after 5 weeks, the head of foreign intelligence, he meets me, you know, I'm brought in an armored vehicle to his compound, all the same men. They're like, oh, welcome back, Mars. I'm like, oh, what's up? You know? And they go, why were you here not in 3 weeks? You said 3 weeks, but it's 5 weeks, I said. Sorry, MI6 training took so long. My apologies. You know how it is with these agencies. And they're like, oh, he's a funny man.
So they have got a sense of humour.
So I sprayed it just. But honestly, it worked. We had this interview with this one lady. So, all the journalists are like messaging me as I get out. They say, Mars. We want to give you an interview, and, you know, we're going to say such good stuff about you. You know, journalists are mostly scummy, apart from Lotus Eaters and you guys, of course. And they go, you know, Miles, we would love to interview you. These people wrote terrible things about me in the past, just like straight up fake news. And I was like, okay, sure. I'm going to arrive at Birmingham Airport at 2 a.m. on a special flight. Be there. Be ready. And they're like, okay. And they're all probably waiting outside the arrival terminal at 2 a.m. There's no flight to Birmingham Airport at 2 a.m.
Right.
And, you know, they're waiting there. And it's like 3 hours later. They message me, hey, what's happening, Miles? I've got like five of six of them on the ropes. And I go, oh, geez, man, they're keeping me special branch. They're talking to me. But you know what? If you wait another hour, I'm going to be there. And I'm going to speak to you. You're my top guy. I love you. You're going to get the scoop. You're going to get the scoop.
You're my favorite journalist.
2 hours later goes by. And they're like, what's happening, Miles? Like, Jesus, five more minutes. I've got photos and videos for you. I've got photos and videos. And I'm okay. And eventually, I send a message like, ha ha, you know, like I arrived at Gatwick or something. So they're just waiting for me. I'm just sitting at home laughing to myself.
Good one, yeah.
And then this one lady, she promised me like 20K for exclusive, which just makes sense. It's like, oh, yeah, 20K for the story of, you know, Lord Mars in Kabul. I'm like, yeah, okay. And then, of course, the Israel-Palestine thing happens like that week. So she's like, you know, budget's gone down a little bit. So sorry, Mars. And I go, okay, how much are you offering? £200. Fuck off. Like, you. I'm like, yeah. I'm not fucking scared of the time. I'm not scared of you. Yeah. But I'm like, okay, we'll just do it. I go with someone else. Then we do an interview of her. And she takes us out. Where'd she take us in London? Some nice...
some sort of social club.
Yeah, London club or whatever. She tells us that she used to work in Afghanistan as a news reporter, and she's lost her job because she's like very anti-Taliban, and she went to Afghanistan recently to report on women's rights. And of course, she started tweeting terrible stuff about the Taliban as soon as she arrived. And of course, they were like, yeah, well, get the fuck out of the country. What are you doing here?
They just support her badly.
But she tried to make it out like it was some sort of like story rivaling Miles's. Like she was, they came to me in my hotel, told me to pack my things, and then took me to the airport. And like, her story of being, you know, the reporter fighting against against the establishment of the Taliban.
It's a straight up car ride to the airport.
Yeah.
If I'm gonna write bad stuff, you can change your name in England for a deed poll really easily. I have several aliases, and Trust me, like, she could have changed her name, gone to Afghanistan, and then published her story 3 months later, and they wouldn't make the connection, you know?
Right.
Published her own different name, but no. She was a journalist who's been working... She was, like, 50 as well, so she's been doing this for a long time. And clearly, like, she did something wrong, so she got deported. She had no job now. She's like, I don't have any savings, and no one wants to hire me. And she was like, how's your financial situation, Miles? You're suffering. I was like, no, everything's really great. I've got so much more business. Taliban merch is through the roof. She's just eyes twitching. She's
very bitter.
She's so bitter.
Yeah.
And she does this interrogation. She's trying to be professional. And she publishes the article. What's it like?
That was dry.
Yeah, it was like the Hitler of Afghanistan, Lord Miles. I get it. Yeah, she doesn't like me. And I just started posting about it. Like, the insults she would write, I would quote it and be like, so true. This is real. And then I'd go, wow, I like Miles more now. We just had fun.
She ended up deleting the article after like a week.
Yeah.
She it was like, that bad?
It was like, oh, yeah, God. Like, yeah, she wiped it.
Remember she was saying, it's the article that'll bring me back.
Yeah, she was saying that to us, yeah. It was funny.
Yeah, this is going to make me my money. I can finally stay in London. And launch my career.
So now then, you're cool with the regime, basically. You could go back whenever. And
well, here's the thing.
You mentioned they gave you a flat.
Oh, yeah, they were like, hey, Miles, you know, what's holding you back from going to Afghanistan more? They're like, please, come more. And I was like, hotels are kind of expensive because they've got these weird compound situations for you and, you know, taking up all the hotels or whatever. And so things are really expensive now. And they were like, hey, we'll give you an apartment. Like, we've got loads of vacant houses that are in decent condition. Here you go. It's worth like 15,000. I'm like, oh, thank you very much. And it's probably bugged to hell, but I don't care. Yeah. Like, sometimes I'm in the room and I just go, oh, pipe bomb airport, you know, stuff like that.
Man,
just giggling behind the earpiece. Like, my phone's bugged too. I guarantee it. But I just sometimes go, all true British militias go to Downing Street right now. Like, again, nothing happens.
Yeah.
Like, I've started exporting loads of Taliban merch, Taliban headbands, flags, pins, all this, 9/11 rugs. You know. I got the Taliban to sign my sneakers as I was being released, and they sold for £2,000. It was great.
Right.
And I was like, yeah. And I called up all my bank accounts, and I was like, hey, Amex, funny story, you haven't heard this excuse before. Listen, I was in Taliban prison, and I actually told the Taliban I'm worried about my credit score, which I actually was. That's what I complained about sometimes. But, you know, I tried to pay my bill, but sadly, I couldn't because I didn't have my card whilst in Taliban custody. And they were like, yeah, lovely story. Google my name. And they were like, oh, okay. Oh, so sorry, sir. Let me put you on hold 10 minutes later. Lord Miles, my deepest apologies about your situation. Your account has been reinstated and you owe us no money. Your deficit has been wiped. Like, the money I did actually owe, minus, you know, not even the interest, like the actual money I spent on the car, like £200 or whatever, each month, just gone. Same with my bank. Yeah. God, I had an overdraft of like up to, I think it was like £5,000 or £10,000 that's available to me. And of course, things were coming out of the account, but things weren't going in. So the account was frozen from things going into the account, but not going out for some reason. So I was in like negative 5,000 when I got back. And I was like, goop. How did that happen? I had money in my investment account, but everything else was screwed. I was in the red. And I called up NatWest, like, hey, my deepest apologies about this crazy situation. Again, they found it real funny. And they put on a very posh accent at the time. I was like, ooh, oh dear, it was a lovely holiday. They're like, oh yes, well, what do you do for a living? I'm like, oh, I can't discuss that. But I was arrested with some SAS soldiers, so you can only imagine. It's very above board. He said, I'm not in jail, so it's obviously nothing dodgy. You don't understand this. And they're like, oh, we catch you. I was just joking that I work as a spy. Because I was like, it might get me somewhere. And they were like, yeah, we're wiping your account. My deepest apologies about this. Like, I just played this game of, hey, some people I'm going to hint that I'm a spy to get out of any trouble that this has caused me. So if anything, it kind of worked in my favour.
I do find it surprising that they didn't want to speak to you at all.
Yeah, no, I thought that too.
And to this day, they still haven't...
No, nothing.
No one's actually asked you about anything.
I think on my 8th trip back to Afghanistan, I got a 40-kilogram suitcase full of Taliban merch, like packed, like stuffed. When I left Afghanistan, they opened up the Taliban airport security. They looked at it and went, oh, Marshall, good, no problem. And when I get back to London, I feel like Luton or something, and I go, okay, well, there's something to declare, something not to declare. Okay, well, this is commercial goods, technically. I should declare it. Like, maybe they'll try and cause problems for me. Maybe they look for some issue that I'm causing, and they'll finally throw a book at me. They're trying to build a case, maybe. Maybe it's a long-term play. I don't know. You know, if I'm causing problems, maybe they just want me out the way. So I went to somebody's declare counter. There's no one there. It was quite early in the morning. I press the law button, and the lady comes. She's like, oh, where did you come from? Dubai. I'm like, oh, yes, but I came from Afghanistan. She's like, what? Oh, we came through Dubai, so you just got some cigarettes, some alcohol to declare. Not quite. Unzip. 40 kilograms of Taliban merch. It's like, yeah, it's a huge bag. And she's like, you can see it press this emergency button for special branch underneath the desk. And she's like, can you wait there for a moment? I was like, oh, I guess so. And no one comes.
Really?
Yeah, she goes, she picks up the phone and she makes a call and she's like, you know, keep it private. And she's looking through it all. I was like, yeah, I've got the seats for it. She's like, where'd you pick this up? Taliban in Kabul. They're like, what? I was like, yeah, they're my friends. Google me. She's like, no. And she's like, you're Muslim, bro. I was like, no, Christian, Catholic. And I do the sign of a cross. And she's like, oh, okay. And, well, technically it's not allowed. It's allowed, but it's not sanctioned. Okay, well, special branch, you're going to come speak with you. Just wait here. And we wait half an hour. No one comes. We go, well, we got no one on shift, it seems. One of the busiest airports in Europe. Mm. No one's on shift.
No one's on shift in case there's a terrorist.
Yeah.
No one on shift. Yeah,
they probably ran my... They just asked my passport details. So maybe they ran my name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's no QRA or anything. So so they're like, okay, well, what's your address? We're going to come visit you. I'll give you your address. I'm like, okay, what's this address here? They're like, okay. Sure. So I go back and I go, well, I'm gonna sell this quite soon though, so if you want to raid my place, please do it soon. But like can you knock on the door? I don't want my door busted down, my landlord's gonna be pissed off. And like,
yeah, no, can't, okay. Like, sure,
yeah, right. You ended up calling them asking when they're gonna come raid your house.
Yeah, so it's like 3 days in, I've sold half a merchandise and I'm just like, I've tidied the room, I've even put like a welcome message. I say, hey, knock twice, I'll open the door, just please don't knock it down, you know, the landlord's gonna be pissed. Yeah, I leave like little messages. I even have like some tea ready for them. Like, I've set up like a kettle. And I call up like the counterterrorism hotline or something. I'm like, hey, you know, you guys are meant to raid my place and I'm gonna fly out soon to Sudan or something. Can you like hurry up please? Like, it's kind of inconvenient. Like, you know, if you have to do it, these are my working hours and this is when I'm gonna be home. I've actually left a key under the doormat, so if you know, you can use that. And they're like, okay, let me call you back. I call back like half a day later. No, it won't be necessary, you're good. Hang up.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm not a threat. I'm not
right.
Threat.
Yeah.
Imagine from the perspective of like someone who works in intelligence.
Yeah, it's like
Miles would be a treasure trove. He spent all this time with all these like high ranking guys that no one's been able to talk to or getting
or
identify.
Well, that's what I would have thought. You're personally not a worry.
Yeah.
But
them,
he's
right?
A treasure trove.
But it's you might not be a worry, but you, surely you've got interesting things, interesting bits of knowledge for them. Surely.
In 2019, when I was in university, I tried to join the British Army twice. I wanted to join Marines and I wanted to possibly join Reserve. So I submitted everything, but it was during COVID, of course, or was it 2020? Sometime during COVID. I mean, the submission, they say, oh, we'll be in touch with you in 3 days. They never got in contact with me because it was, you know, peak COVID and no one was taking applications. So, you know, maybe they just don't want me. You know, if I make two or three applications and they don't want me, well, whatever, I'm not going to keep following it up. And then, so they probably looked at this like, hey, you still want to be British Army. He's a nationalist. He's Christian Catholic. And he's like friends with the head of foreign intelligence, all these ministers, and he's been to Afghanistan like 10 times, and he speaks a decent amount of Pashto and Farsi. Huh.
And they don't even think to ask.
No, you could ask. They don't hit me up. No, I'm kidding. Taliban watching this. I'm kidding. I'm joking.
They had the chance. They blew it.
They blew it.
They
you have
the
to
chance.
Pay me $20 this time.
Two burgers.
Two burgers.
Okay, well, we've got to draw it to a close there, I'm afraid, chaps. But it's been very, very interesting conversation. Really appreciated it.
Yeah.
We could keep going. We've probably only mentioned like a quarter.
I know you've got loads
more stories. Well, next time you're back, we'll have you in again. I'll talk to you about more stuff.
Thank you. Well, I'm popping back to Afghanistan in a week and a half. The gold mine is happening, by the way. Big announcements happening in January or February, if all goes to plan so far.
Okay.
Big announcements.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm undoing NDA for some things, but very good.
All right. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
All right. So until next time, I hope you enjoyed that. Take care. Bye bye.